A view now of the civil war in Syria and the horrible chaos wreaked by ISIS in the region from across the border in Turkey. Journalist and author Robin Wright reports from Gaziantep, a Turkish city booming with military hardware, refugees, advisors, and all the signs of a war just 40 miles away. Wright says the war has changed the face of Turkey's border region, but hasn't made it more inclined to get directly involved in the conflict.
Southern Turkey is now the frontier for the war in Syria because so many embassies and aid organizations have abandoned Damascus. And so the United Nations, the U.S., most of the major NGOs, such as Mercy Corps, are operating out of Gaziantep. And with transferring goods, humanitarian goods, non-lethal military supplies into the rebel held areas. The problem is, over the last year, that territory has diminished significantly. There were four provinces in northern Syria where the rebels had a major presence or control. ISIS took over two of them. The Nusra Front, which is affiliated with Al-Qaeda, has taken off over much of a third province, and that leaves Little Aleppo, or actually Major Aleppo, the largest city in Syria, now threatened by the regime of President Assad. There are so many players, so many militias, so many armies fighting this war. It is today the most complex war in the last 100 years in the Middle East.
And does it have a sort of feel of like Peshawar in the old days in Afghanistan, in the sense that there's an arms market there? There are, CIA and special ops people from various countries wandering around. It's become a culture of a military outpost.
Yes, Gaziantep is to Syria today what Peshawar in Pakistan was to the anti-Soviet effort during the 1980s, when the U.S. provided aid to the Mujahideen with help from some of the Gulf countries. That same scenario is now playing out in Gaziantep, where you have U.S. aid organizations flooding goods into northern Syria, but you also have this area where the Syrian interim government, the opposition forces, are now headquartered. And there are spies from all different kinds, whether it's the United States or ISIS. The problem in Gaziantep and all of southern Turkey is the influx of 1.6 million refugees. It's just stunning. Around Kobani, I went to four different refugee camps, and they're growing every day. In one refugee camp, I saw more than 3,000 people living in just over 400 tents. And that's also affected the cities, because many are trying to look for jobs so that they don't end up living in tents.
How much of an investment is the U.S. making here? You saw the materiel and you described it a little bit. But this is not cheap, what the U.S. is attempting to do in this kind of rear guard action against ISIS from Turkey.
Well, the United States has invested just over $3 billion already on humanitarian aid, medicine, food, and other goods. There's another $90,000 for non-lethal military equipment, things like trucks and meals for the soldiers, the kind of toteable meals that you can take to the battlefront. And then there's another $100 million in aid to the local councils inside Syria that are trying to govern in rebel-held areas, provide services such as garbage and medical services. For the international community, it's one of the greatest humanitarian challenges, really, since World War II. The scope of it grows every day. And the World Food Program just announced that they're going to have to cut off 1.7 million refugees in aid because they just don't have the funds from donor nations. You consider that half of the population of Syria, some more than 10 million people, are today either refugees in countries around the region or they're displaced inside the country.
And, this has been going on for quite a long time. There's 200,000 estimated dead by the United Nations, and that is possibly even an underestimate of what's gone on, in the carnage here. I like the way you itemize what it is the U.S. is spending on military hardware. For instance, $58,000 an hour for a B-1 bomber, $39,000 an hour for an F-15E fighter, F-22 Raptor used in combat against ISIS in Syria, $350 million is what those F-22s cost. And again, I'm not saying that this is cheap or expensive, but it certainly indicates that we are kind of all in here, even if there's no boots on the ground.
Absolutely. And the cost of a Tomahawk missile is $1.2 million. The cost of a B-22 to operate just for 1 hour, and remember, these planes are often flying several hours just to drop a few bombs, is $68,000 an hour. And in Kobani alone, the United States and its allies have run over 300 airstrikes. And that's not accounting for all that we've done in Iraq and other places in Syria. And so far, the impact has had some effect in disrupting communication. The death toll among ISIS is reportedly in the hundreds now, but ISIS still holds more than two months later part of Little Kobani. It hasn't lost significant territory to the efforts either in Iraq or in Syria, that it's proven a pretty incorrigible enemy.
And you can see the flags everywhere from the Turkish side.
Yes, and that's one of the things that's so striking. Sitting on this hillside, watching this war play out with a lot of other refugees from Kobani who are with old binoculars looking at what's happening to their vegetable stands or their little homes. And you realize that the ISIS flag is still flying in the middle of Kobani. And it still holds roughly half of the city. And the Kurds have done well in fighting back against them. And the irony of all of this is that a lot of the equipment the United States is striking is actually American, whether it's tanks, artillery, military vehicles that the United States had given or sold to the Iraqi army. But when the Iraqi army disintegrated, ISIS quickly took that material and took a lot of it back to Syria. So it's one of those tragic ironies of the U.S. intervention, not just today, but of the last decade.
Robin Wright is a distinguished scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's also the author of Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World. Her latest article in The New Yorker is called The Vortex.